World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 139, we discuss some of our thoughts in regards to Hurricane Dorian that both Kartik and I experienced. Our favorite matches of this past week. We've got news about La Liga getting more into social media and having some videos out there on a weekly basis, as well as news about the African World Cup qualifiers, and much, much more, including the letters from you, our listeners, in the mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I am joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, a couple of days ago, on Tuesday, I think I posted a comment on to our all of our subscribers and to our listeners on YouTube who listen to the podcast there, saying that I was hoping that we'd still have power on Thursday when we record this podcast as we're doing now, just in terms of Hurricane Dorian. Both you and I experienced it. It's been probably about 10 days or more of just anguish, anxiety, stress, pressure, and just dealing with this storm that was heading your way. It was heading towards Fort Lauderdale area initially. Looked like it was going to be a direct hit, and then there was forecast to make the turn and to turn up to where I live, which is not too far from Jacksonville. Thankfully for both you and I, we both the storm turned and stayed out in the ocean. Missed both of us, but we got some high winds and rain and no school for a few days here as we all kind of bunker in. And I haven't been outside in about 24 hours, so I'm looking forward to doing that today. How about you? You survived Hurricane Dorian?
Yeah, it was very unsettling to see the storm looking like it was going to make a direct hit somewhere between Fort Lauderdale and West Palm Beach for days because of the direction of the storm. Even though the National Hurricane Center, they got their forecast right the whole time, which was that it was going to make this northward turn. Initially, they had it forecast to make landfall somewhere between West Palm Beach and Fort Lauderdale and then make that northward turn and go up the coast or go through the peninsula. By Friday evening, Friday night, 11 p.m., advisory. They had it staying offshore, lingering over the Bahamas, sitting, and then making that northward turn, which is exactly what it did. Really unfortunate for our friends in the Bahamas. Those of you who listen to the show may not realize this, but that for people in South Florida, and you lived, Chris, much of your life, most of your life, I think, in southeastern Florida, the Bahamas are actually closer geographically than most of the rest of the United States. In fact, most of the rest of Florida. And there are all kinds of cultural and economic ties between the two areas. So even though we didn't get a direct hit in Southeast Florida, the local news and local elected leaders, charities have gone into overdrive because it's our nearest neighbors that got so badly affected and sort of took a bullet for us. So I would encourage people, if you're interested in helping the Bahamas, just go online. There are a number of charities. We're even going to do something through Miami FC at our next home game, et cetera, et cetera. Real quickly, I do want to point out the storm did, and we'll maybe get into this more in what we watch. The storm did, with its outer bands, prevent me from seeing Arsenal's equalizing goal against Spurs because my satellite went out with the first rain band, the first big feeder band coming out of the storm, which was Sunday afternoon, or Sunday would have been at exactly about 1 o'clock Eastern time. What did happen after that was my satellite held pretty well, even through higher winds and more intense rain. So that was a little bit flukish also because it was the first one.
Yeah, and that's the thing about satellite television too, because I go back and think of some instances where satellite ruined my soccer experience. I mean, I think back to, it was the Landon Donovan goal in the World Cup, 2010?
Yeah.
Against this is the one. Actually, no, was it Landon Donovan? It was the game against Slovenia.
No, it was the game against Slovenia. You and I were watching it
at Wowie's in Boca Raton.
Yeah, the TVs went out. Yeah,
The TV went out, and then we came back and we found out
it was the equalizing goal in that match. I think that made it 2-2,
which was a huge goal. It was a huge goal for US's chances. Yeah. So and actually, it's funny too, because in this past week, Amazon has announced that they will be launching in the near future. We're not sure when, it could be next year, a new internet service, which is going to be basically from satellites. So they have satellites kind of around the globe, up in space, pointing to Mother Earth. And so whether you live in a rural area or wherever, you'd be able to subscribe to a internet service plan from Amazon, probably part of their Prime subscription. And in theory, it makes a lot of sense. But in practicality, when you do have cloud cover or you do have rain especially, and especially in a place like South Florida, that ruins your experience, because then you lose the signal and you have to wait, and it's a pain in the rear. So Kartik, talking about watching soccer, I know from watching you, following you on Twitter, you had some great analysis and news about the hurricane storm, which I appreciate that, as well as many others do. But in terms of your soccer watching, what did you watch this past week that stood out?
Yeah, so Premier League and Bundesliga on Saturday mornings. I can't remember the most memorable things. Obviously, Southampton, Manchester United was first thing in the morning on Saturday, and was really kind of focused on the hurricane at that point. But watched that match, and then watched the match between Chelsea and Sheffield United, which was simultaneously with Bayern and Mainz. I got all excited because Mainz scored first, and then Bayern scored six goals. Kevin McKenna, the former Canadian international who played most of his career in Europe, he was on the call. So it was really, really surprising to hear from the world feed a very kind of American / Canadian sounding accent. I thought it was a Fox crew at first because of that accent, realized it was the world feed. And then listened to the other guy. I said, that doesn't sound like Keith Costigan. Sort of did, but wasn't. And that doesn't sound like any of the guys damn it, Fox. I wonder who this is. And it turned out it was a world feed commentary.
Actually, that's something that the Bundesliga should be congratulated for too, because Derek Ray is a perfect example of somebody that they've hired that does occasionally the world feed commentary. Will go ahead and fly out to wherever it is in Germany to call the game from the stadium. So the Bundesliga, in terms of that, are doing everything right. And the quality of the co-commentators, whether it's Gerhard Tremel or many others, they have a good crew. And oftentimes English is not their first language, but they've got some really, really good German analysts who speak English really fluently. We go back to the whole thing about the Bundesliga. It's just a shame that the scheduling of the games and how they match up coincide with the Premier League, because oftentimes you have to make a decision between one or the other, and usually the Premier League will win in that battle, as we saw on Sunday when an American scored a goal during a game that happened at the same time as I think it was the Everton Wolves game or the Spurs Arsenal.
Yeah, it was simultaneous with Everton Wolves Sunday morning.
Right, exactly. So it's just a shame with the Bundesliga. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Oh no! I was just saying. Yeah, I was reacting to your point, which was that Sargent scored that goal for Werder Bremen simultaneous, and it was there seems to be in this era of. It's really the last 6 weeks or so since NBC started hyping this season, this era of Pulisic mania among American fans, I see less attention given to the Americans that are still in the Bundesliga. So there wasn't the sort of excitement over Sargent scoring a goal, an important goal for Werder Bremen. You thought there would be, so and that it was kind of weird.
Yeah, it was a beautiful, beautiful goal too. The only way I actually saw it was through social media, because I was watching, the Premier League morning, and I think for most Americans too that it's the same thing. That yes, it's great that Josh Sargent's doing well, especially this season, even more so in the Bundesliga. But then I wondered, okay, well, from that clip on social media on Twitter, usually. How many people actually watch this game? And the number, I'm sure, is going to be tiny in comparison to anything else out there. So it seems that most people that are watching the Bundesliga in large numbers are watching maybe clips on social media while they're watching Premier League matches.
Yeah, and I think that's really unfortunate for these American players that are left in the Bundesliga and for the league as a whole. Does that change if the league, as reported, goes to ESPN Plus next year? I'm not sure, but we have seen kind of a bump I know there are people who argue with us about this, Chris, but there is a bump in visibility, accessibility, and just kind of general discussion about Serie A in American soccer circles since they went to ESPN last year. Now, of course, they were starting from a base even lower than the Bundesliga, mm-hmm. in fairness. So they had nowhere to go but up. But we've seen the effect they can have on that. Also, should mention I watched the Union Berlin Eintracht Frankfurt match on FS2. It was on Saturday. Also, Liverpool Burnley. It was a disappointing performance from the Burnley perspective. And then Sunday, mentioned the Arsenal Spurs match, and then as well Wolves Everton and that Werder Bremen match. So it's really kind of flipping back and forth between the Bundesliga and the Premier League. Since Monday, Sunday, that Arsenal match really focused on the Hurricane. Did watch ESPN FC special, which was a preview of this week's European Euro 2020 qualifiers. Other than that, it's an international break, and unfortunately, that not only it doesn't limit my ability to watch soccer, just it's my interest in watching soccer. If that sounds fair.
So let me jump in here, Kartik, and read a couple of letters from the listeners too, because this is good timing on this one. So Sunny SoCal Rob 25 says, with college football returning to FS1 on the weekends, it will be interesting if the Fox soccer crew still get to use the big studio or the Bundesliga man cave. Does that appear again? And the answer to that question is that on Saturday, I think it was the Bundesliga man cave reappeared again, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And okay, so let me go on to the next one. Okay, Martin McKay says, did Fox already release their football commentary crew? Haha, no pregame or halftime studio show. NCAA football starting again, and I guess they're giving up on the Bundesliga again as usual. This is why I'm glad that the Bundesliga is going to ESPN Plus. Now, actually, this weekend, actually, just by coincidence, I probably watched more Bundesliga than I have so far this season, and I didn't watch a ton, but it comes back to just scheduling. It's just that at the same time as a lot of these Premier League games. But the things I did notice, Kartik, Keith Costigan, going back to your point earlier, is actually right now he was last weekend, he's in Ireland, so he's taking a coaching course. I think he's going for his A-level license, so he's doing fantastic stuff outside of Fox, where he's growing and learning, and these are great skills to achieve. And he's actually, I think he's been with Crystal Palace a couple of weeks ago, spending time with their coaches, so really focused on that. What happens, though, is when one person goes away, and then you have the NCAA football that returns to Fox, is the Bundesliga becomes filler. So yeah. On Friday's game, which was, I believe, on FS2, which was Mönchengladbach against RB Leipzig, which was actually a good game. Yeah. The Gladbach fans were like booing RB Leipzig, but RB, for many reasons, they were booing them. But RB Leipzig is a better team, and they won the game convincingly 3-1. But so that no presence there from Fox other than just broadcasting the game. Then on Saturday, the rest of the weekend. So on the Saturday, I think it was Union Berlin against Dortmund, and halftime. So again, I'm flipping back and forth between the Premier League and the Bundesliga. Halftime, I tuned in expecting to see some halftime analysis or something, and there was no halftime coverage at all. All it was B-roll video. It was like slow motion canned Bundesliga videos of just players running across the screen and just music in the background and slow, and there was no voiceovers. This is obviously B-roll that they've created for a worldwide audience, just in terms of just filler, with no voiceovers at all. And I was wondering, and I actually posted this on Twitter, I said, okay, is this technical problems, or is this just that they don't have any talent, or is it that they just don't care? And I know that one of the Fox crew on Saturday had posted that they had technical problems, so maybe that's what it was. But it was, I don't know. So basically, a halftime with that kind of analysis or lack of analysis, I switched it off. I was like, okay, let me go back to something else, because I'm not interested in, and this does not pull me in as a viewer. Same thing on Sunday. So I was back and forth between, again, the Everton-Wolves game, and then also later was the Arsenal-Spurs game. And I tuned into Frankfurt against Dusseldorf. And the end of the game is maybe like, I don't know, 88th minute. Saw that Frankfurt were winning this game 2-1. And then immediately after the match, the full-time whistle happened, the world feed cuts off. You mean they just end their broadcast really, really quickly within like 10 seconds. And again, there's no studio analysis. There's no voiceover. There's all it goes to, again, is the visuals and audio. This time actually from the stadium. So you're hearing the voice, the noise of the crowd, with no people talking about anything. And then I think it switches back to the studio. Well, actually, not even to the studio. It switches back to the slow motion audio and video. And that was it. And I'm like, how is this appealing? How is this? I mean, couldn't they have one guy at Fox Sports? I mean, again, maybe it's technical problems, but 2 days in a row, couldn't they have one guy? Just, you mean, who's your friend, Kartik, at Fox? Dave?
Dave Denholm.
Yeah. Couldn't they hire Dave and have Dave come in and do some voiceovers? Or, you mean, Christian Miles, have him come in? Or somebody? I mean, this was FS1, and I'm like, it's almost as if they've completely, if it's not technical problems, they've completely given up and said, okay, we'll just do what we're contracted to do. We're going to do this game, and that's it. We'll show the broadcast, and we won't do anything additional. It was embarrassing. Now, Kartik, from this past week, in terms of some of the highlights for me, it was the story of the 2-2s. And some really entertaining games. Arsenal Spurs, of course, a 2-2 game. Just anything and everything that could happen in this derby always does. Great game to watch. Villarreal against Real Madrid, another 2-2 game. Really entertaining. And probably my favorite game of the weekend overall was the Barcelona against Osasuna. A 2-2 game there too. Just really entertaining. It looked like Barcelona was going to win it, but Osasuna came back to tie it 2-2. Good game there, definitely. So I got my fair share of 2-2 draws over the weekend. A concept that a lot of Americans don't get. I mean, anytime it's the World Cup or Women's World Cup, and I'm looking at the Google Analytics for the website for worldsoccertalk.com, and oftentimes there will be people, I can see what they're searching for, or what articles they're pulling up. And a lot of the times it is, again, these would be new fans to soccer, going, okay, what is a draw? Like, why does soccer end in a draw? So it's always kind of, for me, it hits home in terms of the knowledge base of the average American who's not into soccer and the learning curve that they need to kind of get to a point where they understand how this game works. And as far as some of the other things I've watched this past week, some of the things that stood out, one of which was I finally got a chance to see episodes 2 and 3 of Take Us Home from Leeds United. And again, this is on Amazon Prime. Highly recommended, no matter what club you support, even if you hate Leeds United. But a really intriguing look inside, behind the scenes of how a club is run, everything from the owner to the even director of football, to the coach, to press conferences and everything. Just really fascinating episode or episodes. And in episode 3, it's really intriguing too, because they have the story of Dan James, of course, which, as you know, many of you know, is now at Manchester United. Well, last season he was at Swansea City, and in the transfer window, the winter transfer window, there was an opportunity for him to go ahead and move to Leeds United. He actually travelled to the club, had the medical, and had his picture taken with the Leeds United shirt, as this behind-the-scenes documentary shows, and was minutes away from going ahead and becoming a Leeds United player. But at the 11th hour, Swansea City's chairman, Hugh Jenkins, purposely prevented Dan James from signing for Leeds United because he believed that Dan James was going for too little of a price, which it was true. And the American owner, Jason Levine, was trying to get the deal pushed through, and there was basically boardroom politics. So the video, the actual Take Us Home at Leeds United, goes through this whole episode, which is really fascinating to watch, and some great behind-the-scenes footage. So if you get a chance, if you do have Amazon Prime, check it out. It's called Take Us Home, Leeds United. And really quickly, just some of the other things I caught this past weekend. River against Boca. River Plate against Boca Juniors. Watch this one on Fanatis. And on Sunday, the actual end result, 0-0 from Estadio Monumental. Again, just a great stadium. I mean, I prefer watching these games when it's at Boca Juniors' ground. And but still, it was a good game with a good atmosphere. And also caught Atletico Madrid against Eibar. And then what else did I catch too? I caught the Everton-Wolves game, which was highly entertaining. Juventus against Napoli. I caught the about 15 minutes or so of the first half. And commentary by Steve Banyard, someone that we haven't heard from in quite a while on these shores. And I missed the second half, which was a shame too, because the game ended 4-3 to Juventus. And then last but not least, Swansea against Leeds United, battle for the first position in the championship. And I watched this one on Swans TV. Leeds United, the favourites in this game, playing at Elland Road. And Swansea got a last-minute winner here to win it 1-0 and to move top of the table as we go into the international break. And they will be there top when I go to see them in a couple of weeks. I'm going to go to Swansea, to Liberty Stadium, and catch the next game at home, which is going to be home against Nottingham Forest. So I'll give a chance to, I'm sure, talk about quite a bit about that experience on a future pod in a couple of weeks. So really looking forward to that. All right, Kartik. So let's move on to TV streaming news.
La Liga North America announced last week its partnership with the former captain of the U.S. men's national team and World Cup veteran Jimmy Conrad to host its first ever English-speaking anchor show. A new episode entitled La Liga Zone will air each week, with Conrad discussing his analysis, top highlights, and personal opinions on La Liga matches throughout the 1920 season. The show will also unveil new, never-before-told stories of the league, including its clubs, players, and cities, you know, home venues, etc. And Jimmy Conrad's a great guy to host this because he just loves the culture of football. That's the thing. A lot of former players are very technical and analytical about tactics or the way to play the game, Chris, which I appreciate maybe more than some others, but I really love how Conrad, he absorbs the culture. Mm-hmm. And obviously he never played in La Liga, but he loves the culture around Spanish football. So great choice.
Yeah, this is somebody that, I mean, Jimmy Conrad, I have a lot of time for. He's always interesting. He's always engaging, always energetic. And I watched the first couple of episodes of this La Liga Zone on YouTube, and I'm sure it's on their Facebook channel too, as well as elsewhere. It's pretty good. I mean, for those people who are getting into La Liga or want a refresher or just are interested in learning more about soccer, and there's some good historical information as well as talking about the culture and you mean Mallorca as an example, kind of as one team in terms of on an island in the Mediterranean. It's a beautiful place with a lot of history and castles and things like that. And that's something that I haven't seen yet from, I mean, the Premier League doesn't have anything like this. I mean, so it's good to see La Liga in partnership with Relevant doing this. And they also have, I think, a Spanish language show too that's weekly, not with Jimmy but with somebody else, that's a similar theme. So hats off to them. What's interesting, Kartik, before we move on to the next news item, is that, and I forgot to mention this in the what we've been watching segment, is that I would argue that so far this season La Liga has become more competitive than the Premier League. Now, in terms of the Premier League so far this season, and yes, it's only, what, 4 weeks in, I can't think of any upsets, really, other than maybe Crystal Palace against Man United, which was, I mean, a well-deserved victory there. But in La Liga so far, I mean, you look at Real Madrid and Barcelona, and they've been unable to defeat in, I mean, different games, but Athletic Bilbao, Osasuna, Villarreal, Rayo Valladolid. So there's four teams there too that usually you would think in the past would be just easy, I don't know, 4-0 wins or whatever. But Athletic beating Barcelona and Osasuna almost beating Barcelona, getting the draw, so on and so forth. So
Chris, this continues a pattern from last season where we saw so many upsets early in the La Liga season. And yeah, when you there were a lot of people who just they're very myopic about the Premier League. You can't have any critique of the league. Everything associated with the Premier League is the best in the world. They don't pay attention to La Liga or Bundesliga or Serie A, but they make lazy assumptions. When I mentioned this, because I did mention this week, and I said, you know what, there's no point in watching Liverpool matches. Like Liverpool Burnley was on, I switched channel to the Bundesliga match, Union Berlin, who have just, you know, such a great fandom, yeah. You know, such a great culture around their club, and Borussia Dortmund, because the Liverpool game's predictable. Man City games are predictable. That's the way Real Madrid and Barcelona used to be in La Liga not even 5 years ago, I'd say 10 years ago, just predictably steamrolling teams. There isn't even much drama in their match. It's not just they win every match, it's they're winning every match 3-0 or 4-1. And people will just push back on me saying, oh, well, that's because those two teams are two best teams in the world. And, you know, the Premier League, the top 10, the team that finishes fourth in Spain would finish 10th in the Premier League. And I'm like, just stop it already. You don't even know what you're talking about when you say that. And yeah, it's difficult to compare these leagues. They are largely apples to oranges. And maybe we get too into this conversation, but I'm just tired of people then when you point these things out, like you just did, Chris, saying having all these arguments about why you just can't criticize the Premier League. And it's with Americans, it's not with British people, it's not with English people, mm-hmm. It's with Americans that are Premier League fans. You just can't make the critique of the league at all with them.
The Burnley-Liverpool game is the same one that I tuned out of, too. I was watching the first half. It was just too predictable. And then I went searching for something else. And that's the shame of the matter, going back to what we talked about in the first segment, is that the Bundesliga and Fox Sports has an opportunity to go ahead and actually grow that audience just with consistency, good programming, and just doing the hard work. And it just seems that they're just hot and cold. Like one week it'll be, I mean, Lalas and the crew in the studio and they're getting into the analysis. That's great. Next week it's like there's nobody in the studio at all and all the games are on FS2 and they're just mailing it in. And this is a good weekend, this past weekend, where the Bundesliga had a lot of talking points. But again, really no one's watching this league.
Yeah, I wonder if it also revolves around Ian Joy's schedule with New York City FC, that they and this is what we've said, it's what you said about Keith Costigan earlier, when one of their pundits isn't there, they just mail it in, right? They just don't do anything. They don't have a replacement for the week, or you know, come out with a contingency. Because I do think Ian Joy and Keith Costigan are top level, top shelf hosts and analysts, presenters and commentators and analysts of the sport. I mean, Costigan to me is at the very top in the U.S. And actually, Ian Joy's up there too, right? Mm-hmm. But it's as if when those two guys aren't available, and with Ian Joy, he's not available a lot, right? Because he's in demand. He's got the New York City FC gig, as I mentioned, and I'm sure he does some other work also. They almost then do not feel like they can operate any sort of analytical Bundesliga studio. They did have Stu Holden one week already this season, but generally they don't use him.
Yeah, well, that's the thing I was going to say too, is that, I think I remember Stu Holden tweeting something out on Friday saying like, hey, I'm on my way, I'm in the plane, I'm on my way to New York. And that's the thing, though, too, that the skeleton crew that they do have is traveling the country, going to MLS games to commentate or do the studio work for there. So from what they had before, which was kind of the riches of talent, they had so much talent available. It just seems that, again, not that many people available when there's other conflicting games going on in a weekend. So, but anyway, let's move on. One more news item, and this is thanks to one of our listeners. His name is Shane Rowe for this news tip. But he was wondering this past week, and he reached out to me and he said, like, hey, what's going on with the African World Cup qualifiers worldwide? Because I don't see any listings on beIN Sports. They usually have those games. And I checked all the beIN Sports listings that I have access to. Nothing was there. Shane did some more digging and came back to me. So the news that we can report now is that FIFA has acquired the worldwide rights to stream African World Cup qualifiers, which is a smart move in many ways, because in terms of the platform, FIFA.com, and I'm sure with FIFA's YouTube channel, this is a good way to go ahead and get those games probably in more households with less obstacles. So they can say, hey, all the games, or a select number of those games, are going to be available live across FIFA.com and YouTube, etc. And here's access to them. And I don't think there's a fee involved there too. So it's FIFA dipping its toe in the water. We've talked about UEFA TV that has launched
La Liga,
La Liga TV. I mean Premier League TV. All these different leagues and competitions around the world. And now you have FIFA TV that has these games. So that's something. If you're interested in African football, keep an eye out for it, because I believe it's free. And you mean some of those games are really good, some not so good, but it's like with any competition. But this is an interesting development there.
Yeah, and African World Cup qualifying is arguably more competitive than any other confederation. I'm not saying it's the best confederation, but there's so much more on the line, because only one team out of each group emerges, and then they still have to play off often. I'm not sure what their format is this time, but you get so many upsets and some seemingly random results there that impact who actually qualifies for the tournament more than maybe the random result in South America or Europe, which are the confederations we tend to focus on with World Cup qualifying. So definitely check it out. Thank you, Shane, for that.
Absolutely. Now, moving on to TV ratings. For the second week in a row, Arsenal, with more than 1 million viewers on US television. This was 1.05 million viewers for the Arsenal-Spurs game on NBCSN and Telemundo. And looking at some of these other games too, the Burnley-Liverpool game, 779,000 viewers. Chelsea-Sheffield United, 559,000 viewers. So on and so forth. And then Seattle against LA Galaxy on FS1 on Sunday, 208,000 viewers for that one.
Yeah, a lot of anger about that, Chris, that Fox did not show the Sounder supporters in
the march.
They didn't show them kind of real time. They showed like archived clips of them because they didn't want them. This goes back to the whole problem MLS is having with their supporters groups and the anti-fascist campaigns that the supporters groups that obviously grew out of Portland and Seattle and Vancouver. They've been doing it for years. It's funny that MLS just caught on to this year. They've been doing some really good work on that front for a number of years, and they obviously, we know what happened at the Seattle-Portland game the previous week, which was also on Fox or on FS1, and then this week. So watch this space. I think there's a lot of anger among MLS fans I talk to, Chris, about this.
Especially hardcore ones, too. And for those listeners who may have missed it, I missed it, too. But I think a few people tweeted me about it at World Soccer Talk, saying that the march to the stadium, which is one of the iconic examples of American soccer fandom, the Sounders, you mean all the fans marching together through the streets, holding up the banners and signs and marching in unison. Well, Fox, FS1, what they did for that coverage of that, rather than film that and show that, they used canned footage from, I don't know if it was months ago, whenever it was. It was in the past, obviously to try to avoid any controversy. And to me, I mean, FS1, I guess it's FS1 and Major League Soccer in cahoots with one another, and they're joined at the hip. It's kind of like Sky Sports and the Premier League. There's a lot of things that happen in Premier League matches in terms of some fighting in the stadium and things you would not want to see on television, which does not represent the Premier League in a positive light. And those types of things you often don't see on Sky Sports or even on the global coverage. You have to kind of dig deeper. Those things happen. But again, it's another bad look for Fox's coverage of MLS, I think, Kartik.
It's a very bad look. I assume Fox is being dictated to by Major League Soccer, who have completely bungled this. Again, I think we got into it last week. They don't know who their fans are. I mean, this is what's most stunning to me, you know, regardless of what side of the fence you sit on politically, whether you think the Timbers Army, et cetera, should be involved heavily in the anti-fascist campaign. As I said, in Seattle and Portland, those supporters groups have been for as long as I can remember. This is nothing new, them demonstrating these symbols and being part of these sorts of movements, which is why MLS embraced it for so many years. They use Seattle and Portland in all their paraphernalia and all their your collateral material to tempt other people to throw down $100 million or $200 million to buy a team in their league and to try and stimulate interest in the league on television and get these television deals through some that we've talked about. And now they're taking particularly those two supporters groups, those two clubs, and really alienating the fans who have made the league what it is today, in my opinion. So I just think this is horrible. Regardless of what side of the political divide you sit on, it's an example of a corporation not actually knowing who their consumers are. And it's this thing is blowing up. I just watch this space. I think it's going to get worse and worse until they put a stop to it. And actually, we're recording this just after we've learned there are several Timbers Army members that have been suspended now by MLS for 3 matches from attending games. So that's and then that just really inflamed things on Thursday. So yeah, we don't know what will happen, how this is going to what's going to keep happening with this. But that $208,000 they got for this match, Chris, you know, a year from now, if they don't handle this properly, that might be 148, 128. They're going to lose people over this.
Now, Kartik, you said that MLS doesn't really know who their fans are, or they're acting like they don't know who their fans are or who the consumers are. To me, that their fans and their consumers are the mega rich business people that are the owners. They are kind of owners of the league, part owners of the league, and corporations. I mean, that's who they're doing all of this to. And this is not something where they feel passionate about a topic and say, okay, let's go ahead and do this because this is going to help the fans or whatever the situation. They're doing this because of the sponsors and advertisers, making sure that they're all happy, that they don't see anything negative, that the MLS owners or part owners of the league are satisfied too, keep everything squeaky clean. This is not the way you do it, by censoring the information. All right, Kartik, let's move on to listener mailbag. And actually, John Average Geek kind of follows on to what we've been saying. And he says, thanks for commenting on the idea of bias, hatred, complaints on your coverage of Major League Soccer. Actually, that's in reference to us. I think it was JP, I think, that mentioned that we seem to be very anti-MLS. We're not anti-MLS. If anything, I think both Kartik and I have a lot of issues with the way that the business of MLS is being run. We have a lot of admiration and a lot of fondness for the players, the ones that are putting the hard effort into playing in the league and the athletes themselves and coaches. John Average Geek goes on to say, I agree, I love my Major League Soccer team, but there are issues with the league as a whole. Again, Seattle against the LA Galaxy, advertised as a 6:30 Eastern Time kickoff, not kicking off until just before 6:50. I mean, come on, pregame is worthless. Sideline reporter was worthless. Halftime interview is worthless. And on this context, this is probably the longest podcast we've ever done because we recorded part of it on Thursday morning, the rest of it here right now on Thursday evening, hence the delay in getting it out due to technical issues. But the thing is, Kartik, is tomorrow night's game, which is the Friday night's game, USA against Mexico friendly, is advertised as an 8:30 Eastern Time kickoff. Any guesses what time the actual kickoff time is?
8:30, you said?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 8:57.
9:08.
9:08, okay.
Okay, so which is a great tip for the listeners. You know what I mean? In terms of if you're not interested in the pregame coverage, you just want to watch the match, which many of us do, it's on FS1. You mean 9:08. So again, to me, it's like a bait and switch. It's like, why? I mean, we know why they're doing it, which is to try to bring people in early, get them to watch the pregame coverage, and then in terms of having more eyeballs watching the actual pregame, so that helps the advertisers, helps the overall average of the viewership for that game. But it's a bait and switch. You don't have to do that. This is Mexico against the United States. This is a game that a lot of people are interested in. It's a friendly, but still. I just hate that tactic, and that's something you don't see in other soccer leagues anywhere around the world. Rika Richardson says, Major League Soccer should take advantage of the ABC MLS Cup time. MLS should be showing commercials and various promos, not just for the MLS Cup, but also for the playoffs. I guess he's talking about like in the next coming weeks with it being on ABC. Long overdue now. too many storylines in both the East and the West, and the players to show face to market. MLS's biggest issue would be location and time at that location. A 12 p.m., I guess a noon Pacific time game can be disastrous compared to a 3 p.m. Eastern time game. I think it should be 6 p.m. Eastern time. MLS does a better job marketing than Liga MX? MLS for so many years now has been the laziest in promotion and promoting their own league. They rely too much on the other folks, like the TV networks, to do it for them. MLS is not a major league and therefore has to work harder than the big four. Liga MX should doesn't really have to do that because they know who they're marketing to, the Spanish-speaking market in the US. That market has higher income and dedicated fan base. The big four isn't relevant to them. And when he's talking, I think, big four, I think he means the big four traditional American sports. Interesting points there, Kartik.
Yeah, those are interesting points, and I think, look, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I see more overlap between college football fans than NFL fans with soccer, because there's some common elements in college football. And well, then again, those people are fans of European football. Actually, now that I think about it, not really MLS fans. So yeah, those are some really good points. I think they do need to market. They have to work harder than those big four, and I think the only issue with this MLS Cup now is because they have, since 2012, I believe, 2012 or 2013, they changed it to where the team with the better record hosts, instead of having it at a fixed venue. That makes it so much harder to kind of drive interest in it when you don't know where the match is going to be. But of course, they have a time. So I think those are some very good points.
Tom Save the Crew, I love that name, he says, I disagree with Chris about Major League Soccer being great at marketing. Living in Cleveland, I never see ads for MLS Soccer or Columbus Crew on local TV or billboards. The amount of soccer fans I know who don't even know there is a league in this country is unreal. And I've heard that quite a few times this week, too, from other listeners and readers that have made similar comments, too. Hernan Justo says, hello, question about blackouts. I pay for ESPN Plus, I have Fanatis Fubo TV, and via my cable company I have a sports package that I access several Fox channels, and also I can get access to Fox Sports Go. I live in South Carolina, and it was impossible to access the game Atlanta United against Philadelphia last Saturday. ESPN Plus said that my game was blacked out in my area. My cable guide announced it was going to be on Fox Sports South, but instead it was American football documentary playing instead. Okay, I thought I could see it as a replay later, but still blocked. How do blackouts work? I never have problems watching Atlanta United games until yesterday. Now, Kartik, I know a little bit about this. You might be able to fill in some of the blanks too, but part of it, the issue is too, that is that I guess for blackouts, I mean Atlanta United, and they would look at the area around there and go, okay, well, that covers, you mean, obviously Georgia, but also surrounding areas too. So they would probably look at South Carolina, maybe even North Carolina, because there's no team there yet. But looking at maybe, say, I don't know, Kentucky or whichever areas, and say, okay, those areas you cannot broadcast this game because Fox Sports South has the rights to it. And that's going to hurt our local television broadcast. So, but Hernan's point in terms of not being able to watch the game, even though it was supposed to be on Fox Sports South, might be a regional thing too. Where South Carolina, the South Carolina version of Fox Sports South says, "You mean no one's going to be interested in that Atlanta MLS game? Let's go ahead and put on an American football documentary." So Hernan seems like, and actually we've heard this too from other people, I think in the DC area, people that live quite far away from the DC area have been blacked out from watching some of these games. Any additional insight you can give there, Kartik?
That's kind of my take on it too, although I think there might be also just a situation where there's some sort of misunderstanding ahead of time which affiliates are going to carry which matches, because this seems to be a recurring problem. And the way I view it is that once if the rumors are true about MLS buying back all of the potential local deals after 2022. That's why they've asked teams not to negotiate anything beyond 2022. Individual teams, this won't be a problem after that. But yeah, we still have the rest of this season and three more seasons where this could be a problem. So I hope they can solve it at least temporarily until those contracts expire. And then I think what they're going to do after 2022 is they're going to make all matches available to everybody on ESPN Plus, whoever buys, if there's another standalone MLS Live package, and get rid of the territorial restrictions. I think that's part of what they're thinking, which is a very positive step, but we still have three more years of this until then.
Yeah, I agree. It makes total sense to go for national broadcasts, especially with everything moving towards streaming and everything moving towards. I mean, to me, like, local channels have less of an impact or an influence. I mean, if you're in New York, maybe, or you're in certain cities in the country where there's a really strong local sports network. But to me, it hurts the league. I mean, here's somebody who wants to watch a game, can't even watch it through streaming or through television. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Paul Anthony Kelly says, "Hey, absolutely love the show. Been listening to you guys for over 2 years, and it's a must weekly listen. Question, with the 2026 World Cup and beyond being 48 teams, how do you see CONMEBOL and CONCACAF merging and working out the qualifying process? Thanks again for all your hard work." Well, Paul, rather than to go into all the details and kind of thoughts on this one, it's not going to happen. I mean, if there's a possibility of it happening, we could go into more detail. There's a lot of benefits to it happening, more so for CONCACAF because of, I mean, teams like the United States and Mexico and Panama and others would have higher quality opposition that they're playing against, which would mean that the level of their playing ability would increase because the competition is better and stronger. But if CONCACAF did that and merged, that would completely eliminate the power that CONCACAF has within world soccer. And a lot of it's for the smaller countries, the Turks and Caicos, the Trinidad and Tobagos, the Bahamas and Bermuda and things like that, where right now each of those countries has its own vote, which is, I mean, you merge those together and they lose that voting power. Last but not least, Alex says, "Great stuff. Keep it up. Have been listening since, well, before you guys transitioned to TV and streaming topics. Just discovered your YouTube channel. Top-notch stuff." Well, thank you, Alex. We appreciate the comments there. And listeners, all of you can join the conversation. You can always reach out to us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, I have to ask you, and I have a feeling I know what the answer is. All right, this next week, so starting today, Thursday, all the way through till next Tuesday, at worldsoccertalk.com, we've got the list of all the games scheduled, international games, friendlies, CONCACAF League of Nations, Euro 2020 qualifiers, and more. There's 100 games that are going to be on television and streaming. Out of that 100, which ones are you looking forward to? Or what's your number one pick for a recommendation?
Germany, Netherlands, which is on ESPN2 Friday at the normal slot where a Bundesliga game would play on FS1 and a championship game would be on ESPN Plus and a La Liga game, because La Liga said yes to Friday, no to Monday, La Liga game would be on VN. So it's actually a natural time for a match, and it's, I think, far and away the best match of the week in terms of just what's on the line. Now, Northern Ireland, people may not know this, Northern Ireland has a very good shot to nudge either Germany or the Dutch out of the top two in that group. Now, if it's the Netherlands, they have the fallback of Nations League, right? They went to the finals. It's a little convoluted how this thing works, but they would have a second chance if they don't qualify directly. I'm under the impression, and I don't know all the permutations, if Germany doesn't qualify directly, they won't qualify. At least I think that's the case. I don't think there's a second chance or a playoff. I think the playoff now is among Nations League countries that need the second chance and teams that perform well in the Nations League. And Germany obviously was not one of them. They got relegated from their Nations League group, which also included the Dutch. And of course, Germany-Netherlands is arguably the biggest national team rivalry in Europe.
Yeah, and that Northern Ireland Germany game is on Monday. I think that one's live on ESPN.
That would be the other big one, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then the Germany Holland game, like you mentioned, is going to be on Friday. So yeah, two highly recommended games for me, Kartik, which is unusual for me, but I'm picking USA against Mexico only because, I mean, this is going to be the first big test. I mean, all the games pretty much that the US has played in thus far have been against have been kind of weakish competition. And weakish squads, and here we have a good test against a Mexican team that's flying high, and then you also have the friendly on Tuesday against Uruguay.
And let me also back you up on that in a way, because we saw the U.S. play Mexico in the Gold Cup final, but both teams had significant injuries in that tournament, significant pieces missing, and also an omission, Berhalter self-inflicted omission of Josh Sargent, which was a mistake, but. Mexico is kind of back to full strength or close to it. Yeah. And the U.S. has Sargent in this team. They have John Brooks back from injury, who started the year pretty well with Wolfsburg. And they've got Serginho Dest, who I think who's worked his way into the Ajax squad, is on that Champions League squad for Ajax, and who Berhalter has already said publicly is going to start this match.
Yeah.
It's just a rapid rise. And obviously, if you have a player starting at Ajax or playing regularly at Ajax, and he's an American, he's going to play for your national team. So rapid rise for the kid, guy we know is filled with talent. I think that's the real excitement about the game, is seeing Dest in his first senior cap get the start against the U.S.'s biggest rival. And he just had a great game for Ajax in the final qualifying stage to get into the Champions League group stages.
And what a match to start your debut in against Mexico.
Yeah.
So should be good. All right. Well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media, and feel free to live tweet as you're listening to it. Give us any questions or observations you have, or post it on Facebook or on our website. And give us a review on iTunes. We greatly appreciate it. Whether you love the show, hate it, whatever, just give us a review. We love that feedback. And Kartik, heading into a weekend of games where there's 100 games, which is crazy, 100 games to choose from, and that's just the international matches, as well as there's plenty of other games all week long. What should they do?
Enjoy your football.